Welcome to the Messianic Message. I'm Kimberly Rogers Brown.
All right, well, I want to say a prayer before I do any speaking. I thank you, Father, that you allow me to speak to people your word, and I pray that only your word would come forth and nothing of my own, and I pray that you will be in our study after I finish, in Yeshua's name. All right, so we have had some things that have gone on in the last few chapters. One was, you know, we had the Zimri and Cosby episode, and then we had Phinehas kill them both, after which there was a census taken to see how many warriors there were that were able to go to war and how many people are in the congregation. And then we had Zelophehad's daughters step forward to get their inheritance. And now we are getting a reiteration of the law. One of the things that sometimes confuses people is why there are so many iterations of the law. Well, that has to do with the fact that the Lord has to keep reminding people about His law. You know, they do the thing at Mount Sinai, after which they have a golden calf, after which we have to have more instruction on the law, you know, and then we have the Levites, and then we have, you know, them sitting in the wilderness, after which He gives more instruction on the law. And then we have this second generation, and now we have more another reminder about the law. So we have the reiteration of the commandments for the offerings. The children of Israel are getting ready to go into the land, and this is particularly important. I will tell you why in a little bit. But as I was reading this Torah portion, I could almost hear Yahweh's impatience in telling them again what needs to be done. And He has every reason to be impatient with them, because their fathers, you know, this is the second generation, so their fathers in the first generation broke the covenant at Mount Sinai by worshiping Yahweh using an image of a bull. So that tells us that worshiping Yahweh with an image is forbidden. But this generation didn't even bother worshiping Him. They just forsook Him altogether and went over to the Moabites and just started committing idolatry, you see, with the gods of the Moabites. So they went from image worship to idolatry. Thus, this second generation is worse than the first. So, on the macro scale, I've talked at length about this in the past, and so this may or may not make sense to those who have not heard that. On the macro scale, we have the first and second generation. On the micro scale, we have this first and second generation in the wilderness. The first generation on the macro scale is the one that came out of Egypt all the way 1500 years to Yeshua in His death and resurrection. That's on the macro scale is the first generation. The book of Hebrews talks about this. And the second generation on the macro scale comes after Yeshua's resurrection and for the last 2,000 years. But, you know, in the micro generation back there in the wilderness, that first generation was bad enough. But now this second generation is even worse. And what I see in the world today is the same thing. That first people group from, you know, Mount Sinai all the way to the cross, that's the first generation, and they were pretty bad. They were pretty wicked. But look at what has become of this second generation for the last 2,000 years. And here we are, like this second generation in the Torah portion, we're getting ready to go into the land. So what's happening? The Lord is giving His instructions again. to his people, and some of us are hearing those instructions and we're beginning to keep them, as it says in Deuteronomy 30, you know, when you're scattered out there all over the world and hear that you need to keep the Torah and you start doing that with all your heart, then, you know, I will regather you. So that's the scenario that we're witnessing in the world today. So this second generation is just like and even worse than the first generation. And we read about in the future, in the book of Amos, about what they were doing back there in the wilderness, and how that is going to affect us in the end of days. In Amos 5:25, it says, "Did you bring to me sacrifices and offerings in the wilderness 40 years, house of Israel?" He's talking there, the house of Israel is all 12 tribes. It's not just the northern tribes. "You also carried the tent of your king and the shrine of your images, the star of your God, which you made for yourselves." Well, we're going to read about that from the book of Acts, chapter 7, but it further says in Amos 5:27, "Therefore I will cause you to go into captivity beyond Damascus, says Yahweh, whose name is the God of armies." Now in Acts 7:43, it says of that generation, you know, that 40 years generation that was dying off, and that second generation coming up, after which, you know, they went after other gods. It says, "Yes, you took up the tabernacle of Moloch and the star of your god, Remphan, figures which you made to worship them, and I will carry you away beyond Babylon." Well, it appears from Amos and Acts, by implication of the question, did you doing the offerings, you know, during the wilderness years, that 40-year period that Amos asked, it appears that some, or perhaps all of the various rituals that the Lord had talked about in Exodus and Leviticus, that, you know, we're supposed to be doing those, that they had been left undone during the 40 years that the first generation had spent that time dying off. And Eleazar was the high priest during that time. Did he not do what he was told to do there in the tabernacle? Did he not call the children of Israel to the feast or to keep the Sabbaths? Well, we're going to examine this. Of course, the other option is that Yahweh simply regarded the feasts as left undone, because while they may have done them, they were also carrying the tent of Moloch along with the tabernacle, according to Acts 43. And since Yahweh will not share his glory with anyone, he had not accepted their offerings, meaning he had regarded their offerings as not having been performed. In Amos 5:18, it says, "Woe to you who desire the day of Yahweh. Why do you long for the day of Yahweh? It is darkness and not light, as if a man fled from a lion and a bear met him. Or he went into the house and leaned his hand on the wall and a snake bit him. Won't the day of Yahweh be darkness and not light, even very dark, and no brightness in it?" He says, "I hate, I despise your feasts. I can't stand your solemn assemblies." Amos is telling us about what was going on from that time in the wilderness during that 40 years, that they were doing the same things that Amos would later say of that generation and forward, that they were not doing his feasts his way, which he said makes him say, "I despise your feasts. You've taken my feasts and you've turned them into something for you." And he says in verse 22, "Though you offer me your burnt offerings and meal offerings, I will not accept them." neither will I regard the peace offerings of your fat animals. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the music of your harps. So, what's going on in Amos's day is the same thing that was going on in the 40 years in the wilderness. He was not accepting their offerings then because they were carrying the tent of Moloch with them wherever they went. And so, Israel never stopped worshiping images, trying to worship Yahweh through images, and they never stopped worshiping other gods, which is idolatry. And so this illustrates for us also the difference between image worship and idolatry. Image worship is worshiping Yahweh through an image, and idolatry is worshiping other gods altogether. And Israel did both now. And so in this second generation, before they go into the land, Yahweh now has to go over once again the instructions on how to keep his sacrifices when they get into the promised land. That's because, I said earlier, I would tell you the reason why these sacrifices are so important going into the land. It has to do with his altar. What touches his altar becomes holy. His altar going into the land makes the land holy. And his altar on Temple Mount in Jerusalem presents a holiness, a kedusha, of holiness there. It's about the altar. And if you're not doing his sacrifices his way, you're defiling Jerusalem, Temple Mount, and the land. And the people become defiled. And so he is making an effort to make sure that they're going to operate the symbol of his ownership correctly. You see, so he's got to teach them, again, all of these things. Now, that was just verse 1. No, that's not good.
That is good.
The command in verse 2 here is given in a different attitude than Yahweh had originally told them. Remember I said I felt like he's impatient with them. So here in verse 2, he tells them to observe or to see, to offer the offerings. They're going to, you know, see to it. This is the attitude that's going on. See, observe what they do. There's a little bit of kind of an anger with this, like, you know, a parent who has explained to a child how to perform the function, only to have the child disregard the instruction. And now when the parent comes back to the child, he grabs the child by the shoulders, and he looks him in the eyes, and he says, see to it with sternness, you see? So there's a little bit of that impatience here. Now, that term, in their due season, is only the second time that this phrase has been used by Yahweh to his people. The first time was in Leviticus 26:4, when he promised the children of Israel rain in the due season if they would walk in his statutes and commandments. And the reason he had to make this promise is because they had walked away from his statutes and commandments with Baal Peor. He was reiterating to them, because of the failure in this second generation, that his provision is connected to their obedience with these offerings. So he was making a reference back to Leviticus, the due season, it rain, if you keep my commandments. Here he's using the same phrase, due season, which is not in the original commandment, but he's connecting the two because there is an if clause. You will get your due rain if you will do these things in their due season. meaning you'll do them at the right time of the year when I tell you. Now, you know, people don't like to be told that their provision from Yahweh comes because of obedience. They point to their abundant lives and they say, well, they must be obeying just fine because, you know, they're still alive and they have stuff. You know, I've had people actually say that to me. Well, I don't have to keep that Sabbath. Look at all the stuff that I have. Apparently I'm being blessed and I don't have to keep the Sabbath to be blessed. You see? What they don't understand is that blessings always come even if we accidentally obey. And everybody in the world can accidentally obey because even the heathen know not to lie, cheat, steal, and murder. See, that's one of the things that Paul said, you know, so there's a certain number of blessings that come even to the heathen just because they don't lie, cheat, steal, and murder. But curses come when we disobey. And, of course, blessings come to Israel deliberately. To the Gentiles, and any kind of blessings they get comes, you know, just, through their own effort or, not because they belong to Yahweh, but just how things work. There is a difference between blessings and curses in that blessings come as soon as you obey. So, Deuteronomy 28:2, it says, all these blessings will come on you and overtake you. You know, if you're obeying, if you're Israel and you are obeying, then they will chase you down. That's what overtake means. You'll just be going along, obeying the Torah, and suddenly the blessings start. You see? And so they will overtake you if you listen to the voice of Yahweh Elohim. So this is a universal law for Israelites about blessings. You obey and you get a blessing. But mind you, this is not salvation. It is your provision given by Yahweh because he put the law in motion and he must remain true to the law that he put in motion. Curses, however, come, but they don't always come right away. Sometimes they do, but nowhere does the Torah tell us that the curses will chase us down like the blessings do. Yahweh wants us to receive the blessings as soon as possible to see how good his benefits are to us in his kingdom. And sometimes he doesn't have the curses come on us quickly so that we can have a chance to realize what we've done and repent. But curses can come after years of sinning. Curses are the law of consequences that Yahweh put into place, which he must be true and faithful to because he built this law as much as he built the law of blessings. And so he allows us sometimes a little bit of grace in getting those curses. But the phrase, in their due season, means that the children of Israel probably had been doing the offerings all along because they understood now what due season meant when the Levites had been instructed 40 years ago. But he's telling them here that they haven't really been observing his feasts and his sacrifices the way that he wanted them to. So in verse 3, the first offering that Yahweh reiterates is the daily offering, which happens twice a day. This is a continual burnt offering, and the one that keeps the first, and the one that keeps, you know, the altar going all the time. And this commandment was first given at Mount Sinai, as Yahweh explains down in verse 6. There's a phrase that I want to, you probably have heard this, the phrase, thief in the night, that would later become a reference to the high priest checking in the night or early morning on the priests whose jobs were to keep wood on that fire through the night. The high priest would sneak in the middle of the night, and if he caught the priest sleeping on the job, he would take an ember from the fire and catch the priest's garments on fire. In Revelation 3, verses 1 to 3, we read that we will not know the hour when our high priest Yeshua will come. He better not catch us sleeping on the job, or he will put a fire on us and burn our clothes off, like that poor priest who suddenly found himself shamefully naked, running through the streets to get back home. And being naked in the scripture is an idiom for being shaved. So this continual burnt offering must never be neglected. Now, in verse 4, it says that you shall offer a lamb in the morning and the other in the evening. We read here, I think it said, between the evenings. But this verse here in the King James says in the morning, and that word is boker, and then at evening, which is Arab. And so these are two different words, but I want to explain what these times were. A temple day is 12 hours. That's what Yeshua said. Isn't the day 12 hours? And some people get confused about that, and they'll say, well, a day is 12 hours. So, you know, the Shabbat doesn't happen in the evening on Friday night. But Yahweh's day is 24 hours. The temple day is 12 hours because the sacrifices only operated during the day. Then you had somebody keeping the fire going all night, and then you started the next day with a new sacrifice, as you see. But the temple day was then divided into two roughly 6-hour periods, depending on the time of the year. But let's say totally 12 hours. Let's say that the sun rises at 6 a.m. Well, at 9 a.m., the first lamb goes on the altar. At noon, as soon as that noon gets past 12:01, that's called the evening. And so now from the 12:01 to 5:59, that whole time period is the evening. The lamb goes on this in the afternoon on that altar at 3 p.m. So that's when these burnt offerings were going on the altar. Now, I want to just go down a little Torah trail here about the tent. We're going to be reading a little later on in the season about the tent, the tithe. And I just want to put this in your mind that the tent always represents 100%. It is, to use Brandon's favorite word, fractal. It's a fractal, okay? But the implication is that when you've given the tenth, you've given all. So the tenth actually says to Yahweh, oh, everything I have is actually yours, and thank you for letting me have it. You know, that's what that symbolically means. So when we give the tenth, he attributes to us like we have given him 100%. And so we've given him everything. So I just wanted to mention that. In verse 28, verse 6, it says that these offerings are a sweet savor to Yahweh. Well, what does that mean? Like, is it just a pleasant odor to Yahweh, like, you know, he enjoys the smell of barbecue, like steaks on the grill, or what is that? When he says that offerings done the way he wants them done is a sweet savor, what he's saying is that signals to him that he is satisfied with our performance. The sacrifices become stinky to him when we don't do them his way. So not only is obedience necessary in our relationship, but the way that we perform our duties and our His commandments that He gives us must be excellent. We must do them with care and not leave out anything. Now, going down to verse 9, here we read a summary of the commandments that He gave in Exodus 29, verses 35 to 42. And it really is just a summary of that, and I'm going to share at the end of this teaching why it's important that we realize why Moses is summarizing here. So we're just going to go on over to chapter 29 and go down to verse 40. And where it says, "And Moses told the children of Israel, according to all that Yahweh commanded Moses." How we know that we can rely on everything that Moses said is because he always spoke it the way that Yahweh Elohim told him to. At Mount Sinai, he spoke these things in detail. At the end of Exodus, when we're getting all the details about the tabernacle and the offerings and so forth, and the feasts, we are getting that in detail. In Leviticus, same thing. When he is teaching the children of Israel what they need to know that the priests are doing, he gives the details. But here, in these two chapters, Moses is summarizing exactly what the Lord gave him to summarize. In other words, he speaks only the message given to him, which is important because of this. When he speaks, and it's not exactly the same as what was spoken before, it's because that's the way Yahweh told him. But everything Moses said is correct, and that we can rely on it. Moses is always right. You know, I've been asked by people, you know, about keeping certain commandments. Well, do you really think you have to keep that commandment? Or you have to keep it that way? Yes. Why? Because Moses spoke it, and I agree with Moses, whether you do or not. Okay, so Yeshua gave this law to Moses. When we agree with Moses, we also agree with Yeshua. Mm-hmm. Yes. So now, that concludes the teaching.
This has been Kimberly Rogers Brown from TheMessianicMessage.com. Thank you for listening.